Well, I may not be the first to give you a little piece of information. If I'm not the first, I'm going to emphasize it. If I am the first, mark your calendars. September the 20th, Unitarian Universalists will be on Ken Burns Special on public television. The title is Defying the Nazis, the Sharps War. It's the story of Martha and Witzel Sharp, who helped hundreds of Jews escape Nazi oppression during the Holocaust. The Sharps are saints, but not well-known saints. Well, at least until Jim Burns' special comes. If you want to know what the Sharps look like, you can visit the www.uua.org, our UUA webpage, and on the very home page you will find a picture of Martha and Wetzel Sharp. Not many people know that a few years ago, the nation of Israel designated Martha and Wetzel with Righteous Among the Nations, remembered at the World Holocaust Remembrance Center. They were the first or second and third citizens from the United States to be so honored. So who are these people? Well, Martha Sharp was a social worker. Her husband, Wetzel, was the minister of the UU congregation in Wellesley Hills, Massachusetts. In 1939, they heard about the Jewish oppression by the Nazis in Europe. And so they volunteered to the Unitarian Service Committee to go for 6 weeks to help those Jewish people. That 6 months extended to 6 weeks. They and their colleagues worked throughout Europe saving Jewish people from the Holocaust. Now, you may not also know that the Flaming Chalice came out of that period. The Sharps and the Unitarian Service Committee noticed that the Red Cross had a symbol, a recognizable symbol for their work. They thought it would be good if the Unitarian Service Committee, and particularly the work of freeing Jewish people, had a symbol, and so they asked an artist to produce something. He produced a picture of a flaming chalice to stand for freedom. So every time Unitarian Universalists gather, you have the flaming chalice. So why did I decide to speak today about less well-known saints, and particularly with emphasis on ordinary people, not saints, ordinary people who, through heroism, worked to save Jewish people and worked to help all people in need? I'm not just interested in history. We're living in a time in this country when candidates for political office make disparaging remarks about Muslims. We live in a time when racial profiling and animosity runs rampant. We live at a time when salt-of-the-earth, hard-working immigrants are being rounded up and shipped away. This is a very good time to look back at history, because history is always a mirror for the future. Perhaps you know the story of the Sharps and others. If we know that story, we will be better prepared to make a witness against prejudice. Now, I want to interrupt just a minute to say something about Unitarian Universalists. In many congregations, the children in our congregation in San Diego, the children repeat what we call the Unitarian Universalist Affirmation of Faith. We are Unitarian Universalists, a people of open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands. Educators would recognize that. Any teacher here will recognize that as cognitive, affective, and behavioral. We Unitarian Universalists try to know, we try to feel, and we try to act. Unfortunately, too much of the current political climate, particularly among some candidates, is filled with nativism and xenophobia. I think Unitarian Universalists know better, and I think we can make a witness wherever we are for inclusivity. Well, why? Why should we care? Why should we care that somebody makes ridiculous statements? Why should we care if members of our family or friends are buying, being consumed by those statements. Why do we care? Maybe the words of Pastor Martin Niemöller, who also fought against Hitler and the Nazis, are worth remembering. First, they came for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the Catholics, and I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant, not a Catholic. And then they came for me. And by that time, there was no one left to speak up for me. I'm talking about this today because you worship here in a lovely Jewish synagogue. I'm talking about this today because of the current political atmosphere, which I think is rife with prejudice. I'm talking about this today because I believe human rights and human dignity are under fire and need to be preserved for all people, whether they're legal or illegal. Basic human dignity, it seems to me, is due to all people. People who labor unseen, doing the most menial jobs. When CEOs of corporations are compensated in the millions of dollars and do not pay the janitors who clean their offices a living wage, much less benefits, good people need to speak up. In the back of our hymn book, there's a great little saying by Margaret Mead. It talks about being willing to speak. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. We can make a difference. Now, in addition to the Sharps, Martha and Wetzel Sharp, I want to share with you a story about another little place, a little village called Les Chambons, in the mountains of France. Les Chambons was settled centuries ago by Protestants fleeing persecution. During the Second World War, the pastors of that little small Huguenot congregation at Les Chambons led their people in an active, nonviolent resistance to the Nazi occupation forces and to the collaboration provided by the Vichy government. Not many people know the story of Martha Wetzel Sharp. Not many people know the story of Pastor Andre Trocmé and his assistant, Pastor Edward Tice. These two pastors led the people of Les Chambons to save Jews, beginning, first of all, to save Jewish children, and then they broadened the program to save adults as well. The little village of Les Chambons had only about 5,000 people, and they saved 5,000 Jews from the Nazis. Pastor Trotme encouraged his people when the Second World War began to resist the Nazis with weapons of the Spirit. Those poor farmers and shopkeepers in that little village responded by hiding Jews in their homes, in their barns, in their outbuildings, even in their woodlots, saving Jews from being deported to Nazi death camps. When the people of Les Chambons were asked after the war why they had risked themselves to help the Jewish people, they were surprised. They said, "We don't understand all the fuss. We help people because they needed help." During the war, a petty official of the Vichy government confronted Pastor Trotme. "Where are the Jews?" Pastor Trotme responded, "We do not know what a Jew is. We know only humans." That is justice at work. I'm speaking about this because injustice and humanity's inhumanity continues to this day. Now, the story of Les Chambons is not too well known. It's been written about. The reading today came from a book by Philip Holley entitled Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed. More recently, just a few years ago, a professor at Smith College in Massachusetts wrote a biography of Pastor Trotme and his wife. But neither of those two books is bestsellers. They'll never make Stephen King's list. In his book about Les Chambons, Philip Holly described a community of care, and here's what he said. He used the analogy of finding your direction, of a compass. Think about it. He said, the North Star of caring is awareness of the preciousness of human life. You want to set your direction for your life? Set it by the North Star of the preciousness of human life. So why do we care about bombastic words from political candidates? Because we care about the preciousness of human life. Why do we care about racial profiling wherever it occurs? Because we care about the preciousness of human life. Why do we care about people who have to work two jobs just to make ends meet? Because we care about the preciousness of human life. I could go on and on. You get the point. People can make a difference. We may never be in Les Chambons, but we can make a difference. As we join in efforts to promote racial dignity or immigrant rights, or whenever we can speak against hate-filled speech, we can make a difference. More than that, we will begin to build up what I call the continuity of a community of caring. People through the ages who are dedicated to the preciousness of human life. We are links in the chain down through the centuries, if we will be. Here's what I mean. The story from our college years. Betty and I went to a small college in Western North Carolina called Mars Hill College. It was a two-year school then. It's now a four-year university. We left Mars Hill over 60 years ago. I know we don't look that old, but... We left Mars Hill over 60 years ago, but we have never forgotten Dr. Pierce. Dr. Pierce was one of the campus characters. She had a distinctive speech pattern. She was absolutely dedicated to teaching English literature to college students. Dr. Pierce was also the person in charge of all of the celebrations of the campus, including the installation of officers of all the student groups. Year after year, that installation service never varied. Dr. Pierce planned it so that on one side of the stage stood all of the outgoing officers holding lighted candles. On the other side of the stage stood all the incoming officers. At a precise point in the service, the outgoing officer passed a candle over to the new officers. And at that very instant, by decree of Dr. Pierce, the English professor, the narrator read the words from John le Carré's In Flanders Fields. Here are the lines. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If you break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Fields. The point is that we are part, in my opinion, of a long, long stream of human history. History which reaches back 500 years to Transylvania, when people were saying you have to worship according to one certain way, and Unitarians said, no, you're free, religious freedom. We do not have to think alike to love alike. It's a chain of caring which goes back to early America, colonial America, and early American history. When universalists said, everybody is loved by God, the universal love of God, in the face of the majority opinion which said, most people are going to hell. It's a strain, a long chain of community of caring which goes back to Unitarian universalists going to the bridge at Selma with Martin Luther King. To James Reeb, minister from Washington, D.C., who was murdered because he dared to be working for voter rights. The stream of history continues all the way through the Sharps, saving the Jews, continues to just a few years ago when the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee sent workers to Haiti to work with people following the earthquake. It continues to this day if we will allow it to continue. Now, what can we do? How do we, Unitarian Universalists, we're not going to go to Haiti, most of us. Most of us will never go to Nazi Germany or someplace else. We can say something to our neighbors when we hear something that's not said. We don't have to get an argument with them. That doesn't help. Simply make a witness. We're not called upon to win the argument. We're called upon to make a witness. Make a witness for human caring. Make a witness for the preciousness of human life. Make a witness for being a part of a community that continues through the ages caring for people. May it be so. Amen. Thank you for listening.
I'd just like to know what the Sharps did for 6 months.
What they did? They provided safe houses. Can you hear me if I'm not behind the microphone?
Yes.
Are you recording this?
I am, yes. Yeah, so you won't, your answer won't be recorded.
They provided safe houses. They provided fake IDs, visas, to get Jewish people out of Europe. I think they did what all people did. It just happened that they were not as well known. The Red Cross is doing the same thing. It's possible, I'm not sure about Amnesty International, whether they were involved or not, but they were all working together. And the Sharps are known because they were just two people who really dedicated themselves to finding and helping Jewish people.
I wonder if you could give us an example, a concrete example of what you mean by getting witness to someone who expresses thoughts of prejudice, disrespect for other people. For example, giving up a small pocketbook version of the Constitution would be an example?
I think it depends on the person. I have two sisters, both of whom are to the right of me. One is more right than the other. And I learned a long time ago it doesn't do any good to argue. But what I can do is simply say what I believe. One of those sisters just this week sent me a an email quoting somebody who was quoting somebody who was quoting somebody all about prejudice. And I simply wrote back why I did not believe that. So I think the key here in this political campaign, as some well-known person said, don't boo, vote. That's of course true. But I think it's also true that we say it to our neighbors and friends. We don't have to be ugly about it. If somebody is giving us a hard time or saying, but so-and-so is right because, listen, look what's happened in our country. We can just say our piece. We just say we believe in the preciousness of life. You want to know an elevator speech? We believe in the preciousness of life. Unitarian Universalists have for years stood for the preciousness of human life and dignity. Now, we can root that if we want to in varieties of theological understandings, but that's who we are, and so we can say something like that. And if you want to give them a copy of the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, go for it. But I have an idea they already know it. But people can apply those things that way there is.
When the Holocaust occurred, the United States did not take as many Jewish people as they could have. For some reason, I was alive then, I don't know the details. Just that we didn't really help out in the way that we could have. And now you hear about these people that you just talked about who took people into their homes and actually risk their lives and imprisonment and the lives of their children, everyone living there, to help people. So here we are again with refugee situations in the world, and we are afraid to take people in, or people are saying this, because they might be terrorists, or they might present some sort of danger. And it's almost, it's embarrassing that people will take such personal risks in other places, and as a country, we won't take our share, we won't do our share in helping people.
You just heard a good sermon. But that's true, and I think I just heard somewhere recently that we have finally gotten up to 10,000 refugees in the United States. And I understand that people are afraid, but to be afraid of Muslim refugees is a kind of racial profiling. Just as, it would be ridiculous to say, I don't like Catholics because Catholic priests are pedophiles. That's a generalization based on specifics. If you start generalizing from the specific, then you'll say, no Muslims. If you start generalizing from the specific, you'll say, no to everybody. My sister, who gives me a hard time, she thinks, is Roman Catholic. And when she starts generalizing about people on welfare, I remind her that not all Roman Catholic priests are pedophiles. A few were. Sure, they're welfare cheats, but not all people on welfare cheats. Some of the people who work hard at Walmart don't get paid enough.
I was around this in World War II, and the Jewish people were thought badly about in the government of the United States. I mean, we didn't want to go to war, really. I mean, there were all kinds of things like that, and it just never stops.
Anti-Semitism is alive and well. It was alive then. It's still alive today. That's why we make a profit. That's why we try to say what we understand.
Why do you think we're so tolerant of this certain bombastic politician? And if he was a person of color, I don't believe that he could get away with all the comments that he says daily.
I don't know. You know, this is an old... this could be a class in politics. I know that people are hurting. A couple of months ago, maybe three now, Carrier, that makes air conditioner, you may be feeling it right now, moved a plant out of Ohio to Mexico and put people out of work. Now, if you're 50 years old and you've been working 20 or 30 years for a corporation, just think about how difficult it will be to learn robotics. Because manufacturing is now done, generally speaking, by robotics, not by hands-on tools. Just think how I can understand people being afraid. I can understand, you know, I'm sure not you, but generally speaking, people are absolutely frightened to death of human sexuality. So homosexuality just absolutely frightens people to death. That's why we have the OWL program our whole lives, to do really fine sexual education. But people are frightened. So all of a sudden here comes homosexuality or transgender or whatever, and people back off. They're frightened. So a part of it is that people are frightened. Sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for not so good reasons. People are frightened. So those people find in a loud voice somebody to reflect what they're thinking in their hearts. Whether that voice is right or not is not as important to them as somebody saying it. Finally, somebody will say what I want to say. Now, I think that's part of it. And all we can do is make our witness for a quieter, calmer voice. And that's the political... You see, you can't talk about candidates in a church. We are a 501c3 organization. We can talk about issues, but not candidates. So we don't name a candidate by name. We talk about issues. And the issues are fear. The issues are my life is falling apart. The issue is I can't get a job, but those people can come and get a job. I'll bet you can get a job picking strawberries. But who wants to pick strawberries? I've tried it when I was a kid. Wow. Break my back. So there's people, there are people who are frightened. So we don't want to name about an a candidate, but we want to name an issue. People are frightened. And how can we help people who are frightened? And that's what I want us to do. Care about the preciousness of life. Whether it's an immigrant working in the strawberry fields or a 50-year-old, 55-year-old man who just lost his job in a manufacturing. Let's care. That's it. Am I preaching again? Who? Anyone?
No, I think that we've reached the end of our time, but